Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to Old Brother, a podcast about Salford / Manchester's legendary and much-missed musical institution, The Fall. Each week, we invite along a guest to chat about their experiences and memories of the group. A group of whom John Peel once famously said, "You might want a different quote, but it's always the same quote." If you're wondering, we consist of me, Paul Hanley, and my brother Steve, who, as you probably know, was a member of The Fall for 20 years. You can find us at all the usual suspects, of course, but we're hosted at play.acast.com/s/oldbrother. Hope you enjoy it. Right, we're on, I think. Okay, right. So this is the... Right, so this is the inaugural...
This is just the try-out, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. If you come out with something scintillating, we can put it out. Mm. You know.
Yeah, okay.
You tell us where the bodies are buried. So... This is the inaugural podcast about The Fall that me and my brother Steve decided to do. Obviously, most weeks we'll have fantastic guests on who I can't mention yet because none of them have said yes. Can't even get Mark Riley to bloody agree at the minute, but...
we've not asked anyone else yet, have we?
Well, I kind of mentioned it to a few people, but we'll see anyway. But yeah, we'll edit this bit out because there'll be loads of fantastic guests on here.
Yeah.
So for this week, we're going to have to make do with you. So if we talk about your time in The Fall... That's all my time covered as well, isn't it?
That's a long time, yeah.
Yeah, we've not got to cover it all, but what I'm saying, you can't miss any of my bit, can you? If you do your bit.
Oh, no.
Right. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, you've got to say who you are. For the tape, then.
My name is Steve Hanley. I played bass in The Fall.
Right, okay.
Between 1979 and 1998.
Okay, we'll get on to 1998.
Which is 19 years, but I do like to think of the year I spent as a roadie as counting towards it as right, the 20 years.
Right, okay, that means Ian McCulloch was in the band for a year as well then, doesn't it?
He never lifted it, roadie, I never saw him lift anything.
Did a comb occasionally, comb his hair.
Yeah, a can of hairspray. Him and Julian Cope used to turn up, but I think the roadie's stretching it a bit.
Is it stretching it more than 20 years?
They talked to Mark while me and Craig loaded
to that. Yeah, you're not on that photograph, are you?
I'm in the putting the Carl's kit away.
Right, so I wanted to know the first time. When did the first time you ever came? The Fall appeared on your radar then.
Right. Well, I think it was Supporting Magazine. I mean, we'll have to check all this out, won't we? But I think it was Supporting Magazine at the Rafters.
Right. So that was... So you went to see a magazine, so, did you?
Yeah. Obviously, because of the Howard DeVoe old Buzzcocks connection.
Okay. And so that was after the electric Last Night at the Electric Circus, then?
Was it?
Well, the magazine's first gig was the Last Night at the Electric Circus, wasn't it?
Oh, that's
can't be. Right. Did you see the fall at the Electric Circus?
Yeah.
Right. Well, that must be your first time then, mustn't it? If you saw magazine, if it was magazine at the wrapped up, because Electric first time.
Well, it must have been then. Yeah.
That was definitely their first gig.
Yeah, you're right.
I know I am. This is called doing your homework, there, Stephen. Yeah, I'll look this up for next time. So right then. So the first time you saw, quick edit. First time you saw the fall, I believe, was at the Electric Circus the last night. Is that right?
Circus,
right?
And which is strange because why would they make such an impact with all them other bands?
Who? The Fall?
Yeah.
But you didn't go and see them though, did you? Maybe they didn't make an impact at Electric Circus. But Magazine did. So you went to see them, and then
yes.
So that's why you think it was the first gig, because you didn't really notice the Fall. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's it then. Yeah. Where does the homemade T-shirt come into all this?
Well, this is a good question. So, presumably, he didn't make the home... This is, for those listening at home, Mark Riley always says that after the first time he saw The Fall, he made a T-shirt of The Fall, and that was what got him the job as a roadie and then a member, because Mark E. Smith clocked him wearing a Fall T-shirt. So, if we're putting this a tentative timeline together, you all went to the Electric Circus, Magazine blew you away, this is the greatest band I've ever seen, I'm going to follow these forever... Didn't even notice the fall, and then Magazine played Rafters, and you went, and then you actually decided you quite like the fall. Was that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say didn't notice, but that kind of makes sense.
That does, yeah.
Didn't notice, but
so, well, presumably the Rafters gig.
Well, when you went to the Electric Circus, you were just more worried about getting out alive.
Yeah, bloody hell, yeah, Colliers, wasn't it?
Rough, yeah.
All around there, though. I mean, Bellevue and... Well, I suppose Bellevue's more east, isn't it? But bloody hell, yeah. Some rough places in Manchester then to go and see gigs. Christ almighty.
It was, yeah.
Take your life in your bleeding hands.
Well, yeah, just the walk from Piccadilly was bad enough.
So did you walk from Piccadilly to Electric Circus?
Yeah.
Well, how far's that then?
It's not that far.
Where is it, though? So where's Colliers? Is that Miles Platin kind of way? Is it?
Yeah, well, I think it's halfway between Piccadilly and Miles Platin.
Oh, right, so it's not about a cock stride, then?
No.
Right, okay. So a bit
like the Warriors.
It's a bop your way back to Willinshaw.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the Tony Friel Una, wasn't it, lineup? The both of those gigs, I presume?
Yeah.
That must have been, when did Tony leave, then? That would have been a lot long after that, presumably, wouldn't it?
Not long after that. Because I do remember noticing him, because I just started playing the bass around then.
Right.
So I do remember noticing him somehow in me.
What was it? Look at him using more than two fingers.
Well, yeah, look, he can play. No, I remember him as kind of holding it. He did hold it together, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he was.
A lot of the songs were based around his tunes, and it was kind of like a reggae kind of thing, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, the two that are on that Electric Circus, Last Orders and Stepping Out, they're basically just the bass line, aren't they?
Well, really,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Martin's not doing much on them. Well, he's playing rhythm guitar, but it's not like he's carrying it.
Mm. No, it's a lot of it was built around the bass.
So, yeah, so then he left, and then who got in? Was it Eric after that?
So which is funny, because I don't know the next time we saw him after that.
Yeah.
But they would have already had a different bass player.
Yeah?
I think it was... Well, I'm not sure whether it was The Squat or not, which was Eric's last gig.
So you never saw him with... What's his name? The guy who did The Sleeve for Bingo Masters?
No. Johnny Brown, no.
He wasn't in long, was he?
I don't think so, was he? I don't know how many gigs he did, if he did...
They're not many. But it's in that. It's funny
though that it was just a natural thing that they've got a different bass player, as though that just happens all the time.
Little were you to know.
Well, did we not?
Ah, Yeah, so I was in that John Cooper Clarke he mentions, Eric. Well, it's Rick Goldstraw, isn't it? And he was in the band called The Ferrets. That's presumably that's why he's called Eric the Ferret, because he was...
Yeah.
I presume. So what's his name? Is it Eric or Rick?
I think his real name's Rick Goldstraw, isn't it?
I don't know. I've not, but, legend would have it.
His nickname's Eric the Ferret, but... Well, don't know.
As in Eric from the Ferrets, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
so did we see? I don't know if we saw them in between that rafters, and did we? Because I remember that Eric's last gig at the Squat.
Right.
And we've been quite friendly with Mark and chatting to Mark before it. And
yeah, what was Mark Riley wearing?
There was some getting to know them. After Mark Riley got chatting to Mark Smith,
right,
we went to the first time we had ever had a proper night out was we went to see The Passage.
Well, there's a good laugh. There's a good laugh for a night out. Bloody hell!
At the Band on the Wall, right. Which of course is another excellent.
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean? The first time you had a night out with The Fall with Mark?
With Mark Smith,
right? Okay.
No. It was Mark Smith met us in town, in a pub in town, and it was just me, Mark Smith, Mark Riley and Craig.
Right, okay, and went to see The Passage?
We went to see The Passage on the band at the Band on the Wall, yeah.
Oh, so he left on fairly friendly terms then, presumably, Tony?
Well, yeah, I think so, yeah.
It must have done,
didn't seem to be any animosity that night, no?
Yeah, fair enough. So,
do we know why he left?
I don't know. I think, well, presumably, if you put in the, you know, the standard reason for leaving around that time, it was because
Mark was taking over.
Didn't Kay become the manager then, and then Tony didn't like the direction the band was going in. That's pretty much the standard reason for leaving in them days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Unless
well, they did, you know, they didn't seem to be any, they didn't seem to be any animosity between the two of them that night.
No?
So there was a kind of gradual getting to know Mark.
Right.
With a few nights out and then going whenever they played Manchester.
Right. So then what happened when... Here's a good one for you. You were learning to play the bass. Mark was a guitarist.
Yeah.
How did he end up bass player?
Well, I was playing the bass.
Yeah, I know.
In a fashion. Because I've done...
we've done the gig
with the Sirens by this time, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think so,
but yeah. I mean, how did he end up bass player in the Fall? So, just because he had a T-shirt.
Because of the T-shirt and the getting to know and all that.
Right.
He became the roadie, didn't he?
Right. Well, I was only a young lad at the time, so that's what I'm saying. So he was more in with them's the wrong word. He was friendlier with them than you, kind of thing.
He was, and he had a lot more time than I had. I think there was times because I was working. And at college.
Right.
And I was working weekends and working in the week, and I was at college all day, and I think Mark had just left school and wasn't doing anything.
Right, okay.
Just trying to figure out what he wanted to do.
Right.
So there was a lot more... he had a lot more free time, and he used to go to rehearsals and hang out and...
Yeah.
Get to know them, and then gradually... become the roadie.
Right, well, I have a memory, and I'm pretty sure...
So I think Mark went to see The Fall when I didn't go because I was working.
Right, that makes sense. But I have a memory of going to see him rehearse before you were in the band.
Yeah, we went to TJ Davison's, didn't we, one afternoon, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we did, because I might say, you'd always wonder whether these are constructs of memory, but I'm sure they did It's the New Thing for the first time. Mark had the words... Sure, I remember that. But I mean,
yeah, because they were big rooms, weren't
massive,
they?
Massive, yeah.
I mean, later on, that was definitely not a thing that people had come to a rehearsal.
It was definitely a thing then because I went to three or four. I went to one with Mark Riley on Mark on bass, and I'm sure Mark showed me the words to It's the New Thing or someone. I can't believe that because. If he did...
I remember going to TJ Davidson's with Eric on... watching him rehearse with Eric on bass, yeah.
But, I mean, if he did show me the words, that's the only time in the whole of my interaction with Mark Smith that he showed anyone the words. Yeah? Because I remember thinking at the time, we are men, we have big toes, thinking, that's a really weird bloody line. I don't know what that means. I mean, I didn't understand any of it, but that one seems... But I can't have constructed that in my memory, surely. He must have done. It must have happened. Yeah.
For it to stand out like that,
yeah, must definitely,
have done.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a bit weird. Because, like I say, he never showed me a lyric at any other point, I don't believe.
No.
He'd
go out of his way to hide.
Well, I mean, we could guarantee it wasn't about me and that, or you. Or, so I suppose it was all
right. Oh,
yeah. Right, so then, so Mark's on bass. He's nicked Mark, your
so
bass.
So then, of course, they go and do that Peel session, this the famous one where they go and
Davis.
Do the Peel session.
Yeah.
So what was that... In your research, is that after? No, obviously that's before. Oh, was that after the?
You're making the mistake here that I've done tons of research. I'm relying on your memory.
Well, was that? I'm taking it that was after the squat gig then.
I presume so. I don't know. So hang on. When I saw him rehearse, I never saw him with Eric at all. I was going to say that I never knew the fall until I knew somebody in the band pretty well. You know, Mark. I knew.
Right.
I'd never come across them as a bunch of strangers, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense.
No, well, we definitely went to rehearsal at Davidson's with Eric on bass. Because I remember thinking he was playing it with his fingers.
Ah.
And you couldn't really hear him that well. And
right.
It was a big change from Tony Friel.
Right, yeah.
So I'm assuming, so the night in question at the squat where...
Mark had his T-shirt on.
And Mark threw the chair at him.
Eric?
Yeah.
All right, go on, you'll have to explain that.
I don't know what it was about, whether he wasn't playing or he wasn't playing hard enough or he wasn't, I don't know, or he's making mistakes or whatever, but Mark threw a wooden chair at him during the gig.
Bloody
not
hell.
Like, not really violently, just sort of, you know,
yeah,
shoved it what, towards him.
One of them friendly chair throws.
Friendly throwing the chair. Yeah. The chair definitely left the floor. And
right.
But not enough to cause injury.
And not enough to cause him to leave either.
Well, I'm taking it that obviously didn't go down well and there were some problems.
Right.
And then the next thing would have been the Peel session. Where history has it, I'm not sure about this either, that history has it that he took exception to Steve's shirt, Steve the driver's shirt.
That's got to be
one get in the van. But I think there must have been a bit more to it than that.
Yeah, but the weird thing about that is, if you're planning on leaving the band, why would you wait until you're about to get in the van to leave? I mean, I know there was no mobile phones or anything, so you didn't see people that often, but surely, Christ, you wouldn't wait till they pulled up outside your house if you're planning to leave.
Oh, well, maybe he wasn't going to leave. Maybe he just didn't want to do that session.
Because of Steve Davis away?
Well, I'm sure there's more to it than that, isn't there?
There must be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, given the fact that Johnny Brown had lasted about 3 minutes, he must have known his card was marked. He must have known they weren't relying on him. Tony Friel, you could think, well, this is as much my band as anybody, so he could do it.
Yeah.
But Eric must have known he was skating on thin ice, that they could have got rid of him at a minute's notice if they'd wanted, presumably.
Well, I suppose you could say that about anyone, though, couldn't you?
Well, only then. Up until then, if you look at Una, Martin and Tony... And Mark, there wasn't any concept of somebody sharing anybody else, was there? Sacking anybody else, really, was there? Because
that's true. There was no word. Sort of hierarchy where I suppose
that came
to them. It was a band, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when did that come in then? After Tony left, presumably.
I'm gonna say more after Martin left.
Well, no, but Mark Riley was definitely he wasn't on the same level. Sort of, he was an apprentice, if you like, for want of a better word.
Well, he was, yeah.
Yeah, he must have been. So, yeah, I mean, that's what Mark always says, is that Martin and Carl thought he was Mark's man, didn't they?
Martin and Carl thought
Martin and Carl thought Mark Riley was kind of Mark Smith's man, like, if you like. He was sort of on his side rather than on their side.
Right.
They resented him a little bit.
Was the sides at that time as much...
Well, it must have been getting there.
Must have been getting there, yeah.
Although Carl will have taken sides with everybody, you know, whichever side he's
with. Whoever would buy him a pint, yeah.
So did you see the Fall many times with Mark Riley on bass before you started roadieing then, or did you got that band on the wall?
Not that many. We started roadieing fairly straight away because we were obviously getting friendly at this time. And then when he we'll go back to the Peel session, and obviously Eric did, what for whatever reason, he didn't get in the van.
Right.
So then Martin played the bass upside down, didn't he? He's left-handed. Yeah. I think they talked on the way back, because Mark Riley was with them roadieing. And I think they talked on the way back about him joining. So, you know, I don't think there was, like, loads of auditions or anything.
No?
I think he was pretty much straight in there.
So how long after that, then, was Mark's first gig at the Band on the Wall? That can't have been long, then, can it?
Can't have been long.
Were you at that? Yeah, I presume you were.
Yeah.
There's that famous picture of that gig, isn't there?
He had my shirt and my bass.
The bleeding shirt off your back.
Nearly on the stage.
What, leave show business? That's my bass and shirt up there. That's you were getting there, weren't you?
I was getting to the
shirt. Why did he have your shirt up?
Working my way in.
Why did he have your shirt up?
I gave him that. Is the only answer? Sure, I don't know why he wanted it, because it was getting a bit washed out.
One of them shirts out the back of the NME, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did he wear that for the first gig? Bloody hell, I
think he did, yeah.
Gruffy melt.
I think he did. I'm sure it had a hole in the armpit.
Well, if you look on the sleeve of It's the New Thing, you should be able to tell, because he's got his arm up, hasn't he?
Well, he's got his arm up, yeah. That's imagine the other arm.
They were great, them two. They were great,
no,
them two.
No, raise the right arm. No.
Put it down. I noticed Carl's not got his arm up all the way up on that. Christ almighty, they knocked him out. So how long there? So there's a question for you. Here's a question for you. Yvonne was before Mark Riley, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
So Una, when did Una leave?
The God man, the signs are all there, weren't they? You go and see them. You go and see them, and they've got a new bass player, the second one. Then you go and see them, they've got a new keyboard player.
Who the bleeding hell's she? Tony went, Tony Friel. Then they got Tony Brown in. And so that was still Una, Mark, Carl, Martin. And then...
Yeah.
So then you've got Eric in.
So where's Mike Lee come in?
Hang on, rewind. We've not got rid of Una yet. So who was playing keyboards on that session that Eric threw his dummy out? Was that Yvonne or was that Una?
That was Yvonne. I don't think I never saw him with Una, I don't think.
Yes, you did. We've established you saw him at the Bleeding Electric Circus, and that's Una.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, sorry.
I remember it well.
The magazine, yeah.
Yeah. Do you not remember that? Really memorable gig you saw the fall at the Electric Circus.
But what I'm saying is I wasn't privy to why these people were coming and going.
Well, no, you wouldn't be, no, I suppose. You weren't privy to why people were coming and going when you're in the bleeding band, never mind.
It wasn't explained to you.
No. I'm sure it wasn't. So, right, where are we? Right, so now we've got the Band on the Wall, we've got Yvonne and Mark Riley. So that's the first album. It's the new thing.
I remember seeing that letter recently where Mark Smith wrote to Ian McCulloch.
Oh, yeah.
And he mentions Mark Riley in it.
Oh, right, OK.
He says, I'm looking forward to seeing you at our next gig. We've got a new bass player.
Right.
He looks like a young Brian Jones.
He doesn't look like a young Brian bloody Jones.
I think he had the same haircut, didn't he?
Yeah, well, one of the same. Well, yeah, he's got that page boy cut, you know, that sort of Prince Valiant haircut, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So then,
obviously, Ian McCulloch was privy to these discussions.
Yeah, what? You weren't, yeah.
I wasn't, no.
He used to write a lot of letters in them days, didn't he, Mark?
He did. Yeah. He did. He's right, he used to write to people all the time, didn't he?
Yeah. So now we've got Yvonne on keyboards. So you didn't know anything about that other than you turned up at a gig and Yvonne was on there?
Yeah. And I know she was... I mean, we used to go around to Mark and Kay's and she was living in one of the rooms.
Right.
Upstairs.
Okay. Yeah, she...
How they got her, I think... And then again, she wrote to them, I think.
Wasn't there an advert in the NME or something? Or
was there?
I think so. Possibly.
Because she wasn't from Manchester, was she?
No, she was Yorkshire, I think.
Yeah.
How long was Mark playing bass then before Martin left? Was that about a year?
Because... Yeah, I roded for about a year. Yeah. But the band that me and Craig formed when, after Mark joined the fall,
yeah,
we supported them about 9 times.
Yes.
So there was, you know, they had sort of ready-made roadies and support band.
Yeah. Well, that was that.
Very good to us. They gave us loads of gigs and they used to take us in their van and let us use their equipment. And we supported him in...
Bolden?
Liverpool, London, Manchester, yeah.
Where did you support him in London?
The Nashville.
Blimey. Well, I suppose there was a bit like... I mean, Buzzcocks would sort of started that, didn't they? Where, you know, you helped other bands out. It was kind of the thing in Manchester then, wasn't it, I suppose? Buzzcocks helped
well,
out
was.
Joy Division and The Fall.
A lot, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they got them going, really, didn't they? Didn't they lend for Bingo Masters the recording, wasn't that? That was Buzzcocks, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was reading about that recently. There's that Richard Boone that paid for The Fall to go in the studio.
And then were they going to release it, or was it? I wonder if they were going to release it. I wonder if they were ever going to release it on New Hormones.
Well, they were. It was going to be come out on that New Hormones label, but apparently the Buzzcocks took off and they got so big and so busy that they didn't have time to run the label.
Right, okay.
So they gave the Fall the tapes to take around to whoever, and they took them to Step Forward.
Which was Mark Perry, of course, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, the actual owner of the label was Miles Copeland.
Yeah. Well, there was a few, wasn't there? There was like Deptford Fun City was another one. Mm. It was the same label, really, wasn't it, I suppose? I think.
It was what?
It was the same label, really. It had a few different names.
It was the same label, yeah.
But there was quite a gap between that being recorded and coming out. The band was completely different, wasn't it, by the time it came out?
Yeah.
Well, you weren't in the band by the time that came. You were in the band by the time Live at the Wish House came out, though, I think, weren't you?
Don't think so.
Well, I know Carl was. Sorry, I know Carl was gone.
Carl wasn't.
No, Carl was gone.
So I wasn't in the band. No, I wasn't in the band when Big Old Bastard Breakout came out.
No.
I remember that. Do you know the compilation from the Electric Circus?
Yes.
I remember buying that.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
Taking it. And remember that, buying that when it first came out and taking it to Mark and Kay, and they'd never seen it.
10-inch blue vinyl, wasn't it? Worth a few bob that now. It's worth a few bob that now if you still had it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was thinking that about the thing. You had Spinal Scratch as well. That'd be worth a few bob.
And that Ideal for Living.
Yeah. Blimey.
In the folded paper sleeve.
Yeah, with the bloody Hitler Youth all over it. we were never Nazis.
Gave that to somebody.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Bloody lunatic. So, you've got a year supporting, or thereabouts. Yeah. That was Staff 9. A good band, Staff 9, actually.
They were, yeah.
They're pretty good. Yeah. Although, Craig never got on with a singer, did he? Really?
Well, I don't think... He was a funny guy.
Who, Craig?
we know. No, Graham, the singer.
Why? In what way?
I know Mark Smith played it up a lot, but he was quite religious and talked a lot about church. And
he ought to bait you.
No, nothing wrong with that. No, he was all right. I just got on all right with him.
Yeah.
Well, I auditioned for his band. That's how I got in his band.
Right, so this will be when
That's how I met him.
So this will be
after Mark joined the Fall, right. Before me and Craig formed Staff 9, I auditioned for his band. And he had like a rehearsal room in his shed in Old Trafford. And I got in that band, but there was only 3 of us. And I don't know what happened, but it didn't work out.
So is it different? So then you had him in mind when you formed a band?
So I had him in mind when me and Craig decided to put a band together, yeah.
Right, okay. So we kind of glossed over the sirens.
If I remember this right, the drummer, I auditioned for that band and I can't remember what we were called, but... the drummer was in an early incarnation of Joy Division before Steve Morris. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's in Steve Morris's book, isn't it? Where he sees two adverts, one for a band from Macclesfield and one for The Fall, and he goes for the band from Macclesfield. He could have ended up joining The Fall. I presume that's before Carl. It must have been, mustn't it?
Must have been, yeah.
So you're rehearsing.
So that gives you a shot of what a bit of a shot of what Manchester was like.
Yeah,
at the
I
time.
Think you'd write your own ticket if you were a drummer, wouldn't you? There weren't many of them about.
No.
Well, he said that. John Marr, he started off as on the guitar. He wasn't very good. And he looked at all the adverts, the NME, and every other bloody one was for...
Everyone's
they were all for drummers.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to think that there was method in my deciding to play the drums, but I couldn't play anything else. But so, you're rehearsing... Come on.
They had that kit in the bedroom that I bought.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did I buy it, or did you buy it?
No, I got it for Christmas. I presume you bought it for me for Christmas, or, you know, not
right.
you wouldn't have paid for it.
Yeah.
Well, that was from the guy out of, The Sirens, wasn't it? I think so, yeah. Pretty sure it was. Well, it was only half a kit you got from him, and then we sort of assembled the rest of it, bits and bobs.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't have a floor tom,
no. Famously. Well, not that famously. So anyway, you're cutting ahead again here. I'm still on callow youth at this point. So you're playing with Staff 9 up and down the country, supporting the fall. And then, so the next thing that happens is the gig at the factory, the Iggy Pop gig, where Martin decides he's going to leave.
Yeah, I mean, we've not got into how Mike Lee gets into all
this. Oh, yeah, I forgot about Mike Lee, yeah.
So Mark Riley's in the band with Carl, yeah?
Right, of course, yeah.
And then Carl decides to leave, doesn't he?
Yeah. Why? Because he...
Why?
I mean, he was... Every second review said how great he was, so I suppose he was...
This is the story, isn't it? That everyone was kept telling him how great he was and that he could be in any band, which is true, isn't it?
It is true, definitely, yeah, yeah. All right.
And he should be going to London and...
Didn't he have an audition for Iggy Pop? Is that right? Or
he did.
Yeah, he did have an audition. And then he ended up in Public Image Limited. So that was Richard got him that, I believe. Richard Thomas got him the Public Image gig. Because obviously he knows everybody. Richard was managed the band a bit later on, but he was a promoter in London, wasn't he? But so he got Mark.
I don't know who got him, he got the Iggy Pop one, but he didn't get the gig, did he?
No, he didn't. Well, I believe not. Right, so Carl left because he was the next big thing.
Yeah.
He was going to set the world on fire, or set his bed on fire, one of the two.
Probably both.
So then that is...
It is a shame, because you can imagine Carl being in Guns N' Roses or something.
Oh, aye, easy, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was good enough.
He wasn't that good.
He was brilliant, yeah. I mean, that's rightly or wrongly, I mean, that first Fall album, Christ almighty, the drums are twice as loud as everything else put together, aren't they? The producer must have realised how bleeding good he was.
Yeah.
Never liked the snare sound on that first album myself, but there you go. That's a bit technical.
What's wrong with it?
It's like a bloody, I don't know, it's like a cardboard box or something. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I digress. So how on earth, you'll have been party to this as the head robbed it, when did they make the decision to get Mike Lee to replace Carl Burns?
I don't know. I know he was a friend of Mark's sister, and she recommended him, but it's a total change, isn't it?
Unbelievable difference, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it was really weird, that first gig, that one, that was a boredom. Did you play with them at that, or...?
No, I was there.
I was there, yeah, because obviously I was a massive fan of Carl's. Everybody who saw Carl was a massive fan of Carl's, weren't they?
Well, yeah.
But it was such a weird thing to see him play, especially on... It wasn't so bad on the new stuff, but seeing him play Psycho Mafia and Music Scene was just, what the
fuck? Yeah, yeah. I don't know whether they just whether that was down to personalities and they thought, or maybe it had something to do with the fact that he didn't drink and he had a van.
So we got this singer in who had his own rehearsal room. All right, okay.
Well, yeah. Those were things you did have to take into consideration. Back
surely
then.
The fall every gig was a paying gig, wasn't it? That's the thing that you kind of forget. How big?
I don't think they were great paying gigs, though. They weren't.
I mean, you weren't on wages. He wasn't on wages, Mark Riley, was he then? Or did he go on wages straight away? Or
I remember the discussion about Mark, because, you know, back then everyone used to sign on, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you'd get your whatever it was, £13 a week or something. And that the discussion, I think what it was everybody hung out as long as they could. Do you know? Obviously, they'd be out happy to get a job.
Yeah.
They wanted to give you this forever.
No.
So I think how it worked was everyone hung on as long as they could.
Yeah.
But when you start, so when you started getting grief off of the social, you were paid that equivalent.
Right. Okay. That
I know
makes
that's
sense.
That's how it worked with me. So I had that summer where I'd left college and was signing on and then carried on signing on. But once they started hassling you and putting a time limit on you and sending you for interviews, you'd get your dole money replaced by your wages.
So the same amount, 13 quid?
Yeah, it's exactly the same amount.
that's fair enough. Because it's difficult to quantify how big or how small bands were then. Do you know what I mean? How big were the fall? I mean, you think of every band that came out of that Sex Pistols gig as being, you know, instantly touring, paying their own way bands. But, I mean, I think Joy Division were all still working for a while as well until the first album.
Yeah. I don't think that... if you see them... I don't know it's in what it's worth in relative terms, but if you see them posters from back then, it's like 80p, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or a pound.
Well, it ain't a fortune, is it? Even, you know.
No. I think the gigs were relatively cheap, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were, yeah.
These challenges, that's come full circle now, because obviously no one buys the album, but the gig tickets cost a fortune.
Well,
but I think back then it was... So if you're not selling it, or you're just working on your first album and you're touring,
yeah.
I don't think you were making a load.
No, people must have been living for pretty austere lives to do it then, because...
Yeah.
It wasn't like you could say, I'll take a week off work, because it was like drips and drabs, wasn't it, as well? That's the other thing. You weren't
No, once you're in the fall, that was it. There was no... You couldn't do anything else.
No. Because it was like two gigs a week, maybe a Tuesday and a Thursday, and then the Saturday, and then next week it'd be a Wednesday.
You couldn't work on a routine about it. I don't know, but they seemed to come fairly fast, the gigs, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, certainly by the time I was on board, it was pretty much playing all the time.
We're playing here in 2 weeks, or we're playing here in a month, or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think they did it very well, the fall. They did that very well. They did that sort of building up the following by just circling Manchester and all the places around it, didn't they? They were always playing like Oldham, Bolton, Preston and Wakefield. And they built it up from the ground like that, didn't they?
It was kind of like that and London, wasn't it, really, I think?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The odd trip to Scotland and the odd trip to the Midlands. But mostly, I seem to remember it being like... places you could get back from.
I suppose there was not a lot of hotels, was there?
A couple of hours drive outside...
Because that was a big thing, as I recall, that trip to Belfast. Or was it Belfast or was it Derry? I can't remember. But
that was a big thing, yeah. It was that big that me and Craig couldn't go.
Right, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a trip to be taken lightly in them days, was it? A trip to Belfast?
No, it wasn't, no.
Because there's a bit of the fanzine, isn't there, about it, on the back of the first album? Was it Alternative Ulster? There's a clip from the fanzine on the back of the first, on Live of the Witch Trials.
Right.
From the fanzine that while they were over there.
Well, at least they actually did the gig, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Because I remember Mark Riley telling me that he had to learn Last Orders. He'd never played it because that was the only two songs that they knew.
That was the only song that they knew over there. Yeah,
that and Stepping Out, which they still did, didn't they? Stepping Out was still in the set, bizarrely. But
there wasn't the funds for me and Craig to go.
No, I can bet there wasn't.
And they were fairly big then, the four. They were... Because I remember the first gig after they got back from Belfast and when they were telling us all about it, they were supporting somebody at the Lyceum, which is...
That's a pretty big, yeah.
Pretty big, yeah.
So who was in the band then? Was that still Carl then?
Yes, it was.
Right. Okay.
I think it was, yeah. I think Carl went to Belfast, didn't he? I don't think Mike went.
I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue. But as I say, I mean, the chronology gets a bit screwed up because things got released late. Records that you kind of do the timeline by the records, but they got released later, didn't they? So Live at the Witch Trials was Kyle was gone by the time it came out. As I say, and Mike was on board, so you can't really. It gets a bit fluid, doesn't it, about what was happening when?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure we could find out.
I'm sure we could. Surely it's more fun to just talk rubbish for the...
Just...
So, then, how much of the time was Mike... How long before you joined after Mike joined, then?
Again, it's difficult to... Probably a few months. Three months, maybe.
Right.
I don't think... definitely when we went to the Nashville
Right.
So that year, most of them gigs that when we were supporting them, Carl was in.
Right. So I don't think there was very long. I don't think there was only about half a dozen gigs with Martin and Mike.
Right.
Because certainly they never recorded anything, did they?
Well, they didn't, no, that's true.
They didn't even do a Peel session.
So it can't have been long, can it?
Bizarrely, Mike never did a Peel session. Never did one, did he? I don't think. Because I think there was a bit where for all that John Peel goes on about. Me and you did our first one was the same one, yeah.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
But,
Because Mike was in it for a while.
He was, but I don't think John Peel was that enamoured up until 1980. I think we were in for sessions because obviously they were at that level that bands played sessions.
And John Watt.
Yeah, John Watt
was really liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure John Peel was that mad keen on the Witch Trials kind of lineup.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, but he certainly. He had him in for twice, didn't he? He did two sessions.
Yeah, they did two sessions before ours, didn't they?
Yeah. But from. Mark did one. They did one with Mess of My Age. But then there was a while then before there was another. It was like. It must have been a year at least. It must have been. If it was time for Mike to join, Mike to leave, you and Craig to join, and me to join before they did another one.
Yeah, it must have been quite a gap, though.
And
to record Dragnet.
Yeah. Maybe he just didn't like Mike strumming. John Peel, maybe that's what it was.
Maybe.
I like to think he came to... Bloody hell, they've got that young lad on the drums. Get them back in, quick.
Get them in there, about time they did another session. Oh, man, that was so good, that first John Peel session, wasn't it?
It was really good, yeah. That was we did it... If I'm not mistaken, we did it while we were recording Grotesque, didn't we? I think we did like Rochdale, and then were we not down in London to record at Grant's? Then we did the session because I seem to remember we did Container Drivers one day in Grant's and then the next day at the BBC.
Day at the BBC, possibly, I think. Yeah.
Because everyone goes on about the Peel session being better, but it ain't.
Bit of a different setup.
Why?
Them two studios.
Not kidding. Slightly more room at the BBC. Jesus Christ. Can you just say you dunk it up in this wardrobe? Yeah, no problem, yeah. Oh, we won't be able to let you out. Christ. Anyway, we're definitely skipping ahead here. Martin was still in the band. We were at the factory watching Iggy Pop, if you recall.
Yeah.
Right. So you were at that? Did you go to that?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so when did you hear that Martin, presumably you weren't all stood round with one finger in your ear while Iggy Pop was playing, listening to Martin?
No, it was before.
Right.
I seem to remember the conversation going on before. It was, funny enough, it was me, Mark and Craig and Ian Curtis.
Hey, them were the days, eh? I said to Ian.
Yeah. And then Martin turned up later and said he told Mark and Kay he was leaving.
So he didn't tell them at the gig then, or did he?
No, they weren't. Were they at the gig?
I don't know. All I know is the story that I've heard, and I put it in Have a Bleeding Guess, is that he told Mark at that gig. Now, that might not be true. I mean, you know, he told him that day.
Yeah, definitely told him that day, and he definitely told us that night.
So in theory, he could have been impressed with it, and Mark didn't go to that. But I'm sure Mark said before now that he was at that gig.
He was probably, well, I don't think Iggy Pop coming to the Russell Club, he wouldn't have not gone to that, would
No
he?
Way, no, no.
Not even if he lost his guitar inside. Oh, okay, I'll get me, just get me ticket. Yeah. He was heartbroken.
So, he must have been fairly shook up by that, Mark.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you?
You would think so.
I mean, even with all the lineup changes and by now he's like following his own path through it all.
Yeah, yeah.
You thought that, you know, it did become that no one's indispensable.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't then. I mean, you know, it's like
then. He's like main songwriter, backing vocalist, and
I mean, he was by far the main songwriter, wasn't he? I don't think Yvonne was writing much.
No.
Mark wasn't writing much then, Mark Riley.
No, he wasn't.
So by the time of that by that time.
He was writing everything then.
He was writing everything, money, pretty much, I think. So,
you'd think he'd be shook up with it by that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting about that, and Martin's talked about this, is he said he thought the fall, he wasn't sure the fall would carry on, and then he ended up teaching Craig all his
time. I saw that recently, yeah. I'm trying to remember if that was true and if I remember it happening, but...
Well, put it this way, as long as I've known Craig, he was never the best person for cover versions, was he?
No.
And he had, if you look at the songs on Dragnet, Printhead and Put Away and Figure Walks, he had them pretty much boxed off, didn't he? So someone must have bleeding shot him.
Someone must, yeah. So it probably was true, wasn't it? Which is pretty good of Martin.
Very good of him, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You seem to think that people leave bands and there's loads of animosity and loads of arguing and all that. And,
but certainly that would be the impression with the fall, but it's not true, is it? Like you say, if they were at Tony Friel, they were at his gig, and then Una came back, didn't she, for a bit? I think, didn't she?
She did, and she was always there. After she left, she was always at the gigs. Well, and she played with Staff Nine for a bit.
Yeah, right. Well, her and Martin were quite the item then, weren't they? I think.
Well, they were, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean...
She played with Staff Nine at Eric's when we supported the fall.
Right. So it was all very civilised, wasn't it, I think?
It was, yeah.
So then there's a mad scrap. So you must have thought at that point, oh, no, they'll get Craig in on guitar, Matt's on bass, and I'm bollocks to it.
Yeah, that'll be me.
So whose idea?
I didn't have the faintest idea that I'd get into that band.
So whose idea? Oh,
it's obvious, isn't it? You just think Craig could be the obvious replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've been travelling around with them for a year, so they obviously know it. They've been to our gigs, and they'd seen us enough times.
Yeah.
And we watched us when we supported them. And we'd spent enough time in the back of vans up and down motorways to know that we'd got on. Craig was left-handed.
I don't know, that made the difference. But so who had the idea then for Mark to move to guitar? Whose idea was that?
Well, so I think it was the very next day after that Iggy Pop gig.
Right.
That we got the call to go round to Mark Kincaid's flat.
All right, and so
which was no mean feat.
How did they get over? What did he do? Stand on the bleeding roof with two flags? How did he?
Well, I think we had the party line, didn't we? The neighbour had finished on the party line.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose so. We did have a phone. Yeah, we did have a phone by then.
I remember speaking to Kay a few times from the house.
Right.
On the phone.
Right.
And I think she did ring and say, can you come around tomorrow, you and Craig and Mark, and we'll have a chat.
Right, OK.
But I still didn't think that I'd be getting in the band.
Blimey. Well, you must have speculated between you and Mark. You must have, on the bus on the way there.
Well, maybe.
What are you talking about on the bus on the way there? Well, we watched the Sweeney the night before, so we talked about it. So then...
But, I suppose we must have, because...
I always imagined that Mark Riley had had a chat and said, what we should do is I should move to guitar and should get Craig and Steve in. It was his idea. And I don't know that that's true.
I don't know that's true.
Because there's I think it's in Mark.
I think Mark Smith had admit that it was anybody
else's idea. It's in his book, I think, or it's definitely in an interview where he says, we watched the support band, Staff Nine, and I said to Kay, we've got the wrong bass player here. But I'm sure that's the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen Staff Nine. You weren't all that.
I wasn't.
But it worked out really well, didn't it?
It's in the Red Hot Chili Peppers the night before.
But it worked out really well. I think that lineup with Mike Lee was made much more sense musically than because it was kind of a clean break then, wasn't it? Once Martin had gone and Carl had gone, it was a different band, really, wasn't it? I suppose.
It's a whole different band, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it worked a lot better. I mean, I don't know. Was that because you were writing with Mike Lee in mind? It must have been, really, mustn't it, I suppose?
Well, it must have been, because we wouldn't have done them rockabilly tracks, would we?
No. Fire the Jack. Well, I mean, I can't imagine for a minute...
Whether it's writing with him in his mind or whether you've just... That's the only way you've ever heard it.
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, There wasn't a country and western song in the Witch Trials lineup, was there, in a million years? No. No chance. No. There was no way they were doing ding digga ding digga ding digga ding. No chance.
No. There was none of that, was there?
No, not at all. No, it was all four on the floor, wasn't it? Straight four.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that was pretty out there then, wasn't it? It was a bit like Pill doing disco. It was. Bands didn't really do that kind of rockabilly.
No, punk bands didn't do country too much. I don't know where that came from. Well, obviously, Mike's influence must have crept in a bit.
Yeah. But, I mean, I know Mark liked Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
But it must have been, you know, it was quite the departure, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
Fiery Jack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
I mean, so that was my second single, wasn't it? Or third, was it?
Second. Yeah, Thingy was the first one. It Roche Rumble.
Yeah, and then was Our Elastic Man.
That was me. Cheers,
that
eh?
That was you. Sorry.
Cheers, mate.
The only song, my second one was Fire. Yeah, I remember we recorded Fire Jack just after Dragnet. Yeah.
Was that in Wales or somewhere?
Pardon?
That was in Wales, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because Roche Rumble, I mean, people talk about the production on Dragnet being weird. But the production on Roche Rumble is bizarre. It sounds like it's been played at the bottom of a barrel or something, doesn't it?
Well, I think all the Dragnets are like that, isn't it?
Yeah, but that wasn't grand. That was Roche Rumble was Oz, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oz's
same studio.
Yeah, Oz McCormick, obviously, he was the Falls live sound man. I mean, he was every band's live sound man, wasn't he, I think, in Manchester, pretty much.
Everyone, yeah.
Not Buzzcocks. Buzzcocks had their own, didn't they? Buzzcocks had their own PA, I think, but Joy Division certainly, and then, you know, everyone you ever went to see, Oz and Eddie and Di were doing the sound and the PA for in them days, yeah. I think. Right up to the Smiths nicked them, didn't they?
Yeah.
Along with Grant.
They worked with Joy Division, worked with New Order, yeah. Charlatans,
yeah.
James.
James, of course. I think pretty much everybody, I think. They must have been busy.
Yeah. We must have.
Oh, yeah, we must mention that. God rest his soul.
And
Eddie
Spirals.
Hunt.
Yeah. Mentioned, because he died recently.
He died recently, didn't he? I mean, they were great, weren't they, them three?
Yeah.
What a team they were.
They were. It was like, so I can, I've never done it, but I can imagine it's a bit like when you're an apprentice.
Yeah.
They kind of taught you the ropes of touring.
Oh, you're not kidding. Bloody hell.
While taking the piss.
While taking mammothly taking the piss. Jesus,
but
man.
But with a good heart, though.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I'd never...
They taught you how to tour, and they taught you what to pack and what to bring with you and what you needed, and just how to handle it all, and when to start drinking and when not to.
Eddie Allen taught me how to tune a snare drum. Because I didn't have a bleeding clue. He said, you're going to have to do something with that snare drum. And you know, I didn't have a clue. What do you mean, tuning it? This is what it was like when I bought it. I mean, seriously, I knew absolutely nothing. He taught me all that. Mm. That was all him and, you know, and he put the mics on and all that, and you want to try moving this a bit closer and all that kind of thing. Because I didn't have a bleed. Obviously, I didn't have a clue. I didn't know another drummer. I've had a couple of conversations with Carl and Mike, but not about drums. I'd never discussed drums or drum sounds or anything with anybody in my life.
No.
So that thinking about it, but that was definitely Eddie, because he was the on stage sound guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, the monitors. Yeah.
So like you say, he taught me how to do all that, and in between mercilessly ripping the piss out of me at every occasion for being your little brother, or being the band's little brother, really.
Yeah. Oh, we all got it.
Oh, yes. held me in great esteem over his steaming turd in the toilet, that bloke.
Yeah. I was going to say that, but... Yeah. Come on, have a look at this.
I'd rather not, Ed, if you're all right, mate. No, pick me up and carry me in. I wish I could say I'd remember whether it was impressive or not, but I've managed to block it from my memory for enough. But anyway, God rest his soul.
The boiled egg incident.
I'll never live that down. Well, it's coming to something when a young lad in on his first tour of Holland, it's getting excesses of the rock and roll lifestyle, it comes to something when he can't ask his older brother to take the top off his boiled egg without the bloody sound man taking the piss out of him.
No, it's shocking.
I was no good at taking the top off boiled eggs.
Well, do you know, they tend to boil them eggs pretty hard on the continent, don't they?
Yeah, Money, yeah. It's like a bleeding boy, like taking the top of a golf ball. Christ almighty.
Fresh out of Manchester in your 3 minute egg.
Yeah, yeah, I think you think I'd have thought on. Right, well, okay, on that bombshell, I think we're going to have to call this a day for our first discussion. That went well, didn't it? We went from you joining the band to me taking the top off my boiled egg. So, I think we've left a bit in the canister for next time.
Yeah.
So,
just getting warmed up.
Thanks for joining us this week on Old Brother. Please follow us on Twitter at Old Brother Show, where you can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, or RSS. So you'll never have to miss an episode. While you're at it, give us a rating on iTunes, or if that's too much like hard work, at least tell your mates about us. You might also want to check out our books, The Bid Midweek and Leave the Capital, available from Root Publishers and all good bookstores. Hope to see you all again soon. Remember, if you're driving, take your car.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.